charming. He is delightful. Or is that Uncle Lair? I don't know. Hopefully I'll get a shiny new dime for doing this, at least.
Yeah,
there's... That voice is is absolutely recognizable, unmistakable. It is Mr. Tommy Edwards. Hey, Tommy,
hey,
how are
Steve.
You? Well, the name.
Yeah, thank you.
And the name of your book that we're talking about is "I Grew Up Listening to You: Stories from Behind the Mic." And I want to begin this way. I want to tell you about a cat burglar responsible for a crime wave. I mean, you're thinking, why is Steve telling me about this? The newsroom should be doing this, right? Well, the
A cat burglar.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you kind of lost me at that, but go ahead.
Okay. The burglar in Ipswich, England, wherever that is, had been swiping pens, children's book, artwork, sock puppets, condoms, cameras, caught the thief in the act. And neighborhood children helped this along, because what they did is they opened their doors in this community to the 3-year-old Siamese cross, truly a cat burglar, who would take these things out of the house. And finally, when he made off with an iPad, somebody said, enough is enough. So someone took a picture of all the items. Theo's dad did that. Theo's the cat. And sent all the pictures out in a neighborhood email and returned all of the items except the sock puppets, because the owner of the sock puppets would not admit to owning so many sock puppets. How's that? Would that work for an animal story?
Yeah, we could do something with that, that's for sure. The way Lou Jack would read the story, he would have me breaking up about 20 seconds into it. So, yeah.
Well, how is it that all of that began in the first place?
Are you talking about animal stories?
Yes,
right?
I am. Yep.
Okay. Well, I used to hang out in the studio there at WLS before I went on the air. I went on the air right after Lair. And we would be talking about certain things. And don't forget, before that, long before that, he had to do 60 seconds of agricultural news every morning as part of the license with the FCC. Now, he was no Orion Samuelson or anything like that. He,
no.
Yeah. He would read some farm news, whatever he could find. And then he did a little thing called Barnyard Stories and all that. And then one day when I walked in there, he said, hey, I've got some funny stories about the farm animals. I'm going to do a thing, and here's how it's going to work. I'm going to say, gather the Moppets around the radio, moms and dads. It's time for Uncle Lair's Animal Stories with his cute little friend, Little Tommy. And I said, yeah, call me Little Snot-Nosed Tommy. He went, yeah, perfect, okay. And just like that, we started it. And that's how it started, and he would read these stories. And I just generally found everything he talked about, even when we were off the air and when we're on the phone with each other, whatever, the way he would say certain things just broke me up, and I would start laughing. That's how Animal Stories began, and that's how it lasted for quite a while.
It's funny you say that, because Lou Jack, I was an intern, so I was, I think it was a junior in college, actually, not a senior, when I interned at that radio station. And Lou Jack did give me advice, radio advice. He didn't just dole it out, but he did give me it. And he said, kid, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, or something like that. And truly, I've remembered that all of these years later. The other thing is that Lou Jack truly, 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 truly was an animal lover, was he not?
He did. He loved animals, especially horses. I mean, there were times when I visited him at his place in New Mexico, and he would tell me about going out into the country because he had heard there's some wild horses out there, and he was hoping to get a glimpse of them and everything. But he loved animals. He loved to read science and watch television shows about animals, and sometimes that wound up on animal story quizzes, where he would try to make me look stupid, and that was easy to do. And He, for one question was, for a shiny new dime, what color is the fur of a polar bear? And I thought, boy, this is a piece of cake. I got this. And so I said, yeah, the answer is white. And he said, oh, that is such a good guess, old Tommy, but I'm sorry, you're wrong. And I'm going, what? And he says, no, it's translucent. And I said, wait a minute, that's not a color. And by that time, He's going into the close. That's all the time we have for animal stories today, boys and girls.
And that's exactly how it worked with you, too. I mean, it's something, and I want to talk about the radio programming part of what you did when we come back from a break. But as a radio programmer, you put people together sometimes, and either they had chemistry or they didn't have this thing called chemistry. Why did you and Lujack, you clearly had the thing called chemistry. How? Why? What? How did it work?
What I said a minute ago, he made me laugh. And this for our entire time together. I mean, when we would be talking on the telephone, and I'd say something, maybe it was a little stupid. He'd say, "That is really stupid, little Tommy," that kind of thing. When I was with him in Santa Fe, I think I mentioned this in the book, that he and I were at a restaurant. It was one of the very well-known restaurants in Santa Fe where all the celebrities went to. And I said something about something that was going on at another table, which I'd rather not bring up here. But he said, "That was the dumbest thing I have ever heard you say." And I started laughing, and he started laughing, and we were both doubled over laughing so hard, I thought sure we were going to be tossed out of the restaurant.
So what you're saying is if you, in real life, had it off the air, it's more likely that you can have it on the air.
Elliot, it was exactly like it was on the air, off the air. I mean, when we were hanging out together, just doing things, and he was showing me around Santa Fe, and of course he had a name for everything. The hill he lived on was called Sacred Lujack Mountain, So all these things, and I spent the night there once at his place, and I woke up early in the morning, and I heard somebody in the bedroom, the guest bedroom, and I thought, what the heck's going on? He was putting up these giant shades in the room just to try to keep the sun out because he refused to pay for air conditioning or run the air conditioner. So he just put up these giant shades in the different windows to try to keep the sun out.
All right, we're going to go behind the scenes and talk radio just a bit. I hope I do this right, Tommy, but you'll be the judge. 217 on WGN. Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. The name of the book is I Grew Up Listening to You, which people must tell you all the time, Tommy Edwards. Stories.
That's why I decided to entitle the book that, because that just happens all the time when I talk to people, when I run into people, they were listening to us back in those days, and they would all say, "I grew up listening to you." And I thought that's the perfect title for it.
I grew up listening to you, stories from behind the mic, and there are all sorts of backstage, backscene stories in there. And I want you to offer some of those. I mean, you were responsible for hiring so many radio, legendary radio talent. I mean, I hope you feel good. It wasn't just Tommy Edwards doing, and by the way, what Tommy Edwards did on the radio, doing this isn't maybe as easy as it seems. I'm not so sure about that. But you did make it seem seamless. The smoothest in the world. Is it true that you hired Bob Surratt?
Yeah, I did. I was programming WLS at the time, and we were starting to feel FM radio growing like crazy in the ratings. And one of the reasons I thought it was happening that way was because of talent like Bob Surratt, like Steve King, like Yvonne Daniels. And so, I went to the boss, and he and I talked about it, and I said, let's approach Bob Surratt and see if we can get him to come over to our station, the big AM station. And so we did. We talked to Bob and his brother. His brother Herb was his agent at the time. And so we worked out a deal, and I put him on at night from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And then we made some changes in the daytime. The afternoon person left, and I thought, he'd be perfect. Because the afternoon person over WCFL was Larry Lujack. He had already left the station and was working over there and doing a great job and making big ratings. And so we said, let's put Bob up against Larry Lujack. He doesn't sound anything like Larry Lujack. He's young. He's good looking. He knows Chicago. he grew up here. He sounds really good. Plus, we can get him off the FM station.
Yeah.
And so we got a deal. And the same thing with Yvonne. And then the same thing with Steve King.
All right, one at a time here. So back up a little bit. I laughed because, yes, Bob Surratt, good looking, and he still looks the same. I don't know how he's like the
Dick, he does.
He's the Dick Clark of radio. I don't know how he does it. But and I want to know. I want to drink his water. Whatever he's got, I want to do. But I laughed because you said clearly good looking and implying that Larry Lujak is anything but. So that's why
yeah,
I laughed.
No, yeah, yeah. Well, you know what I'm talking
I
about.
Do, I do. So what did
totally
you hear?
Unlike Larry.
What did you hear in Serrat, or for that matter, my old friend Steve King? Radio. He was at this radio station for, I don't know, 18, 22 years or something like that before. He and Johnny Putman said, you know what, we want to relax a little and go to Florida a lot. With weather like this, I have no idea why. So what did you hear in those two personalities?
Well, Bob was talking about whatever Chicago was talking about. I mean, he was a huge Cub fan. He was always talking about them. He was always talking about the things that were going on in Chicago, and he was out doing things in Chicago. He was a face that you would see on the streets and in the parks and all that. So he was unlike Larry, because Larry's kind of a recluse. I mean, he just didn't do things like that. And we could really market him because of his good looks and because he sounded, and he was very creative, too, very creative. So that was that. Now, Steve King is a rock and roller. I mean, he was a guitarist. He knows so much about music, and he knows so much about rock music, the music that we were playing at the time. So he would be perfect to hire at night.
Yes,
and so that's what we did. We hired him at night. And Yvonne Daniels, with that silk voice of hers, we put her on all nights because the people all around the country could hear the radio station at night. And she just fit in perfectly in that position. So it was all, you know, putting the right people in the right slots. And I think that's really why we were so successful.
Regarding Yvonne Daniels, were you aware that you were like crashing through a ceiling? I was friends with Wanda Wells back in the day. I didn't know I had met Yvonne Daniels, but I certainly did not know her. Those are two names that really, they were among the first two women and African-American women to play music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Yvonne was doing quite well on WSDM. That was the radio station back then. And she was terrific at night. And that was, you know, Landecker was on WLS, and he
Who?
Was doing a great John
Who?
Landecker.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, John was doing great. And so, he wasn't in any danger of losing ratings. But we thought, let's get Yvonne off FM and bring her over to AM. And so that's what we did. And we put her on late at night. And overnights, and, you know, you got people, the truckers, you got people who are driving all night, working all night. You know, it's a 24-hour station, 24-hour country, and listening to radio. So she was just perfect in that position.
Would you hire me? No, let me rephrase that, Tommy. When you hear a personality, what is it that you want to hear in that person that makes you say, that person's right?
Well, it's, you know, I love to do things like this. I think I'm a student of it. For example, I'll just bring another name out, Fred Winston.
Oh, gosh.
Fred Winston, yeah, Fred Winston.
Whoa!
Yeah, when Larry Lujak left to go over to the other station, I decided to move Fred Winston up into the morning show. And because I can't think of anybody who is more spontaneously funny than Fred Winston. I mean, he is just a nut. But you know what? He needs somebody to work off of. It's not just alone. He reacts to people. So we came up with things where people called in and said something and he would react to it. And then Lyle Dean, the newsman, would come into the newsroom and do a thing with Fred called Choose Your News. And Lyle would have three titles and Fred would pick one and Lyle would tell the story and Fred would react to everything that was being. But he was hysterically funny. And that's why he worked so well, I thought.
So this is not from me, this question, and I'll try to get to a phone call or two as well, Tommy. This question is from a listener who wants to know if you can have, it's like asking a baseball manager who's managed, let's say, three World Series teams to create one all-star lineup. Who would that be for you?
Is this a serious question?
Well, not for baseball, but as far as behind the microphone, who are some of the people you would choose? And I hope Serrat and Landecker are there, given that they work at this radio station.
For sure. No, for sure. You know, listen, for sure. I mean, I am so proud of what we achieved back in those days and the people that I worked with. I mean, I love these guys, and we were all very close. I mean, that's one thing that whenever you talk to these guys and you ask, why did you guys succeed so well and why did the station sound so great, is because we were all very close. We partied together. We hung out together. I mean, we would just do, I mean, I can remember the times when I would go, my wife and I would go over to John Landecker's place in McClurg Court, and we would go over there for a party, just a bunch of WLS people, and little Amy Landecker would sit on my wife's lap, and you know, because she was, you know, just a delightful little child, and look at what she's doing now.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were very, very close to every one of our family. So I think that's one of the reasons why it works so well.
In radio today, do you think some of that is missing? And what do you think, if anything, is missing?
Well, I think a lot of it is missing. I think, first of all, what WGN has been doing over the last several months, I think, is brilliant. You know, I've just got to salute you guys, because I think John Landecker at night is perfect. And, of course, Bob Surratt is just ideal in the morning. I mean, he's doing exactly what, you know, he's done all of his career, and it's just incredible. And so I really like what everything WGN is doing, and I salute the managers who are putting it all together, because I know how hard it is.
Well, indeed, you know, but the other thing about this radio station is you can listen to the, I mean, you hear the news, and the news doesn't always make you smile, but yet the radio station overall as a whole does make you smile. It's not people screaming at each other necessarily, and it's not all politics all the time. It is, and it's still the voice of Chicago. Do you think that's part, all of that is part of the secret?
It sounds like, you know, WGN sounds like Chicago, and that's what it's all about. It's like what we did back in the 70s over on the 890 frequency. We tried to sound like Chicago. There were so many stations around the country who were doing less talk, more music, you know, that kind of thing. No. We opened up creativity. I mean, Boogie Check at Night and Bob Surratt's BS Love Counselor and, you know, Steve King with Music People, the interviews and stuff. I mean, we just, it was just a great sounding Chicago radio station.
Hmm. What do you miss most about radio, if anything?
The people. I mean, I really miss hanging out with these guys and you know, just like I said, we were all very close and we have a great deal of respect for one another. I think when Larry passed away, we all kind of, you know, one by one, we were kind of connecting with each other saying, "It's, are you okay? You know, how do you feel?" And Larry did not want any kind of memorial service. He specifically said that, and he told me about that a number of times when he was quietly suffering from this cancer that he was undergoing treatment for and everything. He said, I don't want any kind of memorial service. I don't want anybody saying, oh, Larry, so sorry, you know, I hear about this. So we never had, none of us had the chance to say goodbye, because that a mourning period is important, and we just never had that chance. So well, I think I got off on a tangent there.
But. Not at all. In fact, you did have that chance and took advantage of it in the book, in words. I grew up listening to you, Stories from Behind the Mic. Check out the book if you're interested in Chicago radio. Through the years, he was there doing so much. We didn't even get to talk about the Chicago Bulls and much more. Tommy Edwards, truly an honor to again talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.